from WXXI News. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour is made at parking meters along the streets of Rochester, where drivers downtown pay to park every day. Parking has traditionally been free after 6 p.m., but last month the city instituted a new policy extending the enforcement hours for parking meters to 8 p.m. City Hall says the move was made to help reduce the city's $47.6 million budget gap. The plan was expected to raise about $214,000, but the plan caused some uproar among a number of residents and business owners who said they were caught off guard. They say extending the meter hours would deter people from visiting downtown, and they launched a petition to change the plan. It collected more than 2,500 signatures. Now, others in the community supported the changes, saying the extension was a sign the city is growing, the rates are modest, and turning over spots more quickly is a good thing for businesses at night. Those community conversations led to a kind of compromise. Yesterday, Mayor Lovely Warren's office announced that the city was rescinding the extended enforcement hours and instead increasing the daytime hourly rate by 50 cents. The new parking rules will take effect if the budget amendment is approved at the August 21st City Council meeting. Now, regardless of where you stand in the parking plans, it's clear that parking in Rochester remains a hot button issue. And this hour, we're going to discuss a number of themes related to how parking and parking rates impact downtown development, urbanism, local businesses, growth, and more. Our guests for the hour include Heidi Zimmermeyer, president of the Rochester Downtown Development Corporation. Heidi, welcome back to the program. Also with us is Joanne Brokaw. Joanne is a local writer and improviser. There's a lot to say on this. Joanne, welcome to you.
Thank you.
Our thanks to Arian Horbovitz, creator of the Urban Phoenix blog, who's with us here. Arian, welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Jason Partika is a member of Reconnect Rochester. Jason, welcome to you.
Thank you.
And I'm going to say hello to Blue Cease and make him grab the microphone anyway. He's executive director of the Rochester Contemporary Arts Center. And Blue has worked so hard in the last 24 hours to find anybody else but him to come on and talk about these. I'm mostly kidding. No, it's nice to see you, Blue. It's nice to have you. And look, everyone's got strong feelings on this. We reached out multiple times to the city of Rochester, extended invitations on numerous occasions. They did decline to participate in this conversation. But there's a lot to kind of digest here, and it wasn't just an uproar against it, as Arian and Jason are kind of articulate. So let's go around the room. Heidi Zimmermeyer, the extension to 8 p.m. downtown, that plan was, in a word?
Problematic.
Okay.
I would say problematic. This is the interesting thing. One view of the downtown area is that we've got a lot of prosperity. Things are really cooking. We've grown from 3,250 residents to 7,200, 22 housing projects in the pipeline. The innovation zone has gone from 108 companies at the beginning of 2016 to 174. So on the face of it, you go, my God, we've made it. Now it's time to start capitalizing on this and recognizing that density is really starting to happen, and we need to recognize you got to control the system. And on-street parking charges are a way of doing that. We can talk about that later. But what isn't as immediately apparent is that it's a little bit multi-layered. When you're talking about street-level space, we have a lot of vacancy downtown. We have a turnover in restaurants. We have some new restaurants. It's very fragile still. And in addition to that, when you talk about all the not-for-profit run organizations that do arts like Blues, Rocco Organization, Jiva, you've got the RPO, Eastman School of Music has a whole, 182 concerts a year or something like that, and a variety of other players, Downstairs Cabaret, that really do feel the pinch for anything that impacts evening parking. And so this is not a slam dunk, no big deal situation that we had businesses and enterprises that we felt would be harmed by this change.
Okay. Jason Partika has a very different view. What is it? This city's plan to extend till 8 p.m. was, in a word?
Optimistic for me, because I'm probably one of the people Heidi's talking about that I've seen, Rochester starting to turn a corner when it comes to increasing density downtown. Once upon a time, I was one of those people, the 3,400, who lived downtown, and we would always ask for grocery stores and stuff like that. And Heidi will probably reiterate this, that like 10,000 was always the magic number that what you're really looking for those kind of amenities and that kind of thing. But to bring it back to parking, for us, a lot of us, it's a good way to defend businesses. Like as you have more and more residential downtown, when I live downtown, people are like, where do I park? park on the street. You know, I would hate to see businesses boxed out by guests or residents parking in front of a business and staying there 5-6 hours the night, that kind of thing. So for a lot of us, that was our first thought. But secondly, just parking itself can mitigate development of downtown. You know, there's some really expensive condos that could be put on those parking spaces. There's bike lanes that could be put in those parking places in the right of way, that kind of thing, trying to make a thriving urban environment that's more attractive to more development.
Okay. Let's continue around the table. And Joanne Brokaw, you had some strong views on the city's plan. How did you feel about it?
My concern as a person who lives in the suburbs and who has in the past, you know, 5 or 6 years really come to fall in love with downtown, I was really concerned about it discouraging people from coming down here and seeing what a beautiful, incredible gem we have here. I used to work downtown many years ago, and I hated the traffic and I hated parking. And so when I stopped working downtown, I rarely came down here anymore, except to maybe go to a hockey game or something like that. And just the ability to come down and park and walk around and not have to worry about feeding a meter was really beneficial for me, and it helped me become more involved. And so my big concern was Fringe Festival's coming up. Why are we increasing parking just before Fringe Festival starts? We want people to come down here. We want people to park and see things and enjoy all of the great things happening. And it just felt like a way to say, don't bother. It's a big pain in the butt.
Hmm. All right, Arian.
I get that. Absolutely. That definitely, you know, that's a concern for everybody. In our cities today, it's about really finding balance. And our cities, unfortunately, were not made to handle the amount of automobile infrastructure that they currently do. And for the last 50, 60 years, most cities across this nation have suffered as a result. So, you know, a lot of people will accuse me as an urbanist of hating on cars, saying, you know, all cars are evil and I'm trying to do away with, you know, with all automobiles. And that's not at all. What we're trying to do is just get back to that balance that kind of replenishes the fabric of our city that was destroyed by our highways, by our parking spaces. I think I read somewhere that 28% of Rochester, of downtown Rochester, is parking. What we're trying to do is, you know, in some ways encourage people to use other modes of transit around the city. Now, obviously, if you're coming in for the suburbs, this might not necessarily be the option. But by making parking a little more expensive may also encourage people to make other choices about how to get about our city. Because here's the one thing that I want to kind of put out there today, if I don't say anything else, is that parking is not free. Parking costs a lot of money. There's a study done in 2002 that showed that $127, I believe, billion dollars were spent to subsidize free parking in the United States. That was 2002. I imagine that number is significantly higher now. It is one of the most quietly and nebulously subsidized pieces of our country, and we have to really start taking a look at free parking and how free parking can actually damage our communities, especially our urban communities.
You're saying there's a high cost of free parking?
There is an extremely high cost of free parking. In fact, there was a book written about that.
I think there was a book written about that. Okay, well, Blue Seats, you've heard the arguments. Grab that microphone and tell me where your verdict comes down.
Sure. I mean, first I will speak from Rocco's perspective. We bring about 25 to 30,000 people downtown, and about 98% of those people park on the street or in the city-owned or operated garages. About 2% either walk in from a nearby residence or ride a bicycle. So I think that's, you know, important for us to consider with this. We don't have a parking lot or of any kind. We are, you know, a not-for-profit contemporary art center, nearly 100% public parking. And so by far, the number one concern that we hear from our visitors, and as long as I've been at Rocco for 11 years now, the number one concern is parking. Where do we park? How much is it? How long is it? Does that parking meter over there work? What's wrong with that one over there? There is so much anxiety surrounding parking. And I think across the board, anybody who deals with the public on the street level knows that it is It's a major psychological impediment to one relaxing in an urban environment. So that's Rocco's perspective on this. We've definitely felt like this would be significantly damaging to our events. We organized the citywide gallery night first Friday. In 2007, we started that for the small venues in town, and we specifically chose 6 to 9 p.m. because parking was free during that time, and we want to encourage people to quickly go around to multiple small venues and come into Rochester from elsewhere. So there are many, many organizations, about 40-plus small businesses and not-for-profits and festivals and groups who got together and shared their perspective on this and felt like this would be significantly affecting to their business in various different ways, and there are many ways to dissect that and adjust and approach this particular plan in Rochester to charge and ticket from 6 to 8 p.m. I think the broader concepts about parking, about urbanism, about a multimodal transportation in Rochester, I also will just say, and I'll hand the mic over after this, but across the board, I think the businesses, restaurants, not-for-profits that were involved with writing and advocating for and endorsing this petition are 100% in favor of more bikes on the street in Rochester, and they also understand that parking is expensive, and the costs of parking will go up both for the customer and for the city. So I think that it was a specific response to these conditions.
Okay. Because I was going to ask Heidi Zimmermeyer, why are you such an anti-urbanist?
You know, it's a funny thing, because what we're all, I think, if you really cut through the layers, we all agree with each other.
Yeah.
But
absolutely.
I think we're talking about things on different planes. One of the planes is what Blue was just talking about, which is what is the experience of people who are patronizing restaurants and arts venues and concert halls and that sort of thing. And how do we manage that along with people who are coming in at 5 or 6 at night and sleeping in their apartment overnight? And then you got people that show up at 8 in the morning and they're there for the day. So how do we manage that? And this whole concept about being a sea of parking lots, that's an absolutely heinous way to develop a city. And these things are all true. And I think the real issue isn't we're going to get rid of cars or we expect people not to drive anymore, because in a market like ours, it's not even physically possible for that to happen. So we're all recognizing it's got to be a blend of things.
Mm-hmm.
The urban development story has got to be about, look, when you go down a block and all you see is a parking lot, there's no desire to be in that place. The place-making part of that is a zero. It's failed. And so we got to talk about how we use land. And parking lots are a horrific way to use land. All of these issues are relatively recent. 10, 15 years ago, we were talking about last one out, turn out the lights. It was like there wasn't a developer for a piece of land. We had empty building after empty building after empty building. Now, all of a sudden, we wake up and find ourselves in an environment where things are really starting to happen. And when you've got a Datto, for example, or a CGI or Brand Networks or Live Tiles that are tech companies that are growing, in some cases, as many as 20 to 30 people a month, if they can't accommodate parking for those people, that company will have to move out. And whether they stay in Rochester or not, you know,
talking about maybe losing companies.
Oh, my God, yeah. I mean,
over parking.
Not necessarily on-street parking, but the parking issue is big and it's complicated. And we need to be smart about the way we look at it. We can't just say, no, we don't, you know, get out of your car and figure out another way to get to work. Because businesses will just go, okay, we're leaving Rochester.
Okay.
So you got to balance. The word balance, I think, is accurate.
All right. So, and one other question for Heidi before we kind of kick it back around to our guests. Jason raised the perspective, I'm a little surprised because the Reconnect Rochester guy didn't come in with the urbanism perspective. He came in saying, he thinks, imagine you're a business and someone can just camp in a spot all night long. And you've got people who want to cycle in and out, bars, clubs, et cetera, and they want to come down, but they can't get a spot because one person is sitting in that free spot the whole darn day. Is that bad for business, potentially?
During the day, yes, because you've got a lot more businesses that have clients and customers that come in. And, I mean, you're right about on-street parking. You ask, why do we have it set up this way in the first place? It's to encourage turnover. And so what we've done in Rochester is we've said, okay, from 8 to 5, 8 to 6, we're encouraging turnover. And after that, we're just begging you to come down here. And so the deal is, you know, how many businesses between 6 and 8, for example, are really being harmed by the fact that that parking is free? So far, and, you know, in a year things may change, we're not hearing that that's an issue, but it should be raised and it should be looked at continuously. When does that begin to be a problem? Because let's just say we've got 10 vacant spaces in a two-block area. What if they were all filled with restaurants, bars, nightclubs, art galleries, whatever? Then all of a sudden your on-street parking needs and parking period in that segment of time is going to be very, very different. And so we got to watch because it's a volatile, changing environment, and we need to be thinking ahead of the game, not being reactive.
So it's about balance, and this, at least in your mind, this got the balance for the moment wrong. Okay.
It just got corrected.
Okay. Well,
it just got fixed.
The whole notion of extending to 8 p.m. And listeners, again, if you're just joining us and you missed the news yesterday, the city of Rochester is ditching that plan to extend pay meters to 8 p.m. It's going to go back to 6 p.m., but they'll add 50 cents to parking during the day. Aaron, you want to add to this? Go ahead.
Yeah, I think the city made the right decision in kind of bringing this back to free after 6. You think about the kind of, you know, who is going to be patronizing establishments? Who is going to be downtown between 6 and 8? It's folks that are maybe getting out of work. Maybe they're popping into the city to maybe they don't even live in the city. I think we have to look at different audiences coming in at different times in this city. That's probably about the time where people from outside the city are going to go downtown to grab a drink with a friend or with a group of people, right? And that's what's going to happen in that 6 to 8 time, right? It was very easy, you know, or it will be easy again, you know, after 6 when you could kind of drive in there and you wouldn't have to worry about the meter at all. You know, and that's the other thing we that's interesting. We're talking about things like walkability, bikeability, bike share downtown. But if you're not from here, you still need a place to park your spaceship. And, you know, to experience that walkability for many people, they still need a place to put their vehicle. And I think
maybe a circulator.
You know, it's possible. I have mixed feelings on circulators because usually I call them just Disneyland rides. But, you know, there is that. I do understand that piece of it is that the people that are coming in maybe at night are maybe more people from outside the city coming in for more of a recreational situation. And the last thing, if you want to enjoy your city, like you were saying, you know, the last thing you want to do is kind of worry about feeding that meter again and again. So I think raising the prices for, you know, 50 cents for the, you know, up until 6 p.m., I think that's the way to go. It is really acknowledging, you know, we have to raise this. Parking, the cost of parking goes up like anything else. Your groceries have gone up in the last 10 years. Parking is probably going to go up too. It stinks, but it's the reality of it, right?
And let's just say, hypothetically, the host of this program has an outstanding parking ticket. I mean, look, I'm not asking anyone to wipe it out, but I will say, I think Nicholas on Twitter has a well-intended tweet that kind of misses the point. He says, an extra $2 is a small price to pay for an amazing once-a-year Fringe Fest show. If that really stops attendees from going, then they're missing out. True, Nicholas, but it's also the worry of the ticket or the getting the ticket, in case anyone here has one. That's all I'm saying to that. You want to add to that, Joanne? I know how you want to jump back in. Go ahead,
yeah,
Joanne.
I do. I'm the oddball person here because I don't know politics. I don't know economics. I can't speak to how many people came here or there or how many roads there are. I live in East Rochester, and I love downtown. But I think for people like myself, there's two things that make people not want to come downtown. They don't think it's safe, and there's not a place to park. And people, if that's how you feel, can I just speak directly to you? Those are such minor concerns. And if you actually were able to come down and experience, you would see that it is safe And there's a lot of parking, and it's not all pay parking. And so it's really a perception problem. So when we, you know, we're talking specifics and politics, and we get a notice from the city that raises parking, people like myself sitting in the suburb, we don't know what's going on downtown because you've only come downtown at one time and you got stuck in traffic. They don't know that there's great stuff to come in the evening because they don't even want to try. They don't want to get to the point where, like, there's something great down here. And we need to really kind of just educate people more on not only are there great things down here, but it really is easy to come downtown. And I say that as a person who fought it for a very long time.
But it's got to be easy for you to go downtown, it
but
sounds like.
I think that most people, I don't know, your callers can call in and answer this question, but like if you don't come downtown, what's the reason you don't? I'm guessing it's not because there isn't something that you want to do. I think it's probably because you're, like Blue said, you're afraid to park. Where are you going to park? How are you going to park? How much is it going to cost? Where am I going to go? And there are, if there's parking and there's places to go. And I am one of these weird people who spends a lot of time downtown during the business day. I meet with other writers. Like I said, I just park sometimes and walk. And so I am really conscious of the meter ticking when I'm wanting to do something.
Okay. Heidi?
I just wanted to respond to the issue of parking isn't free and that, you know, costs go up and all that. We ought to just review the bidding as to why this change took place in the first place. And the issue is that we live in one of the poorest cities in the country. We have an administration that's been battling, you know, major deficits through no fault of their own. This is we're like a comeback kid city here. And we're still in the middle of this process. And so the issue is they're facing a 47 and change deficit this year. And they tried to come up with a lot of different ways. They have a cap on how much property tax they can raise. And so the idea is, well, how are we going to fill the gap without cutting services or creating a real quality of life problem? So that this was one of many ways. They had a lot of different ways, a little bit of pain spread across the whole community. And that was kind of the theory behind this. I just think that because of the speed with which this had to happen and that they didn't really go out and find out how what the reaction would be, this one little thing, because it's little, $214,000 is like nothing compared to $47 million, and yet it just blew up. So it was the fact that the city was willing to come back to the table and reverse the decision, I think, is to their credit.
Jason,
I agree with
oh,
that.
Oh yeah, yeah. Jason, you want to add to some of what you heard here? Are you more convinced now that the whole business argument doesn't carry as much water, or what do you think?
Well, I worry about how we do the timing of all of this. So I worry we're going to get caught behind the eight ball. You know, it's good that, you know, that 6 to 8 is completely off the table if we re-examine it year after year. But I guess I don't mean to pick winners and losers of our economy, but you mentioned that growing businesses are having trouble finding parking during the day because, well, the reason they even need that parking is because people at these businesses have to live in suburbs and commute in as opposed to having adequate housing in the city. You know, and we've been kind of get beating the drum of starting to build denser development, build up in the city so that we can have effective mass transit so people don't have to rely on the car. And unfortunately, you know, parking in general kind of precludes that. You know, I think everybody wants to silo off two things where we can have both dense urban development and driving around with cars. When, to be honest, ultimately that's not the case. You know, if you have a certain amount of density, sooner or later you have to start taking transit. Like it crowds out, you know, you can't have building then parking lot then building then parking lot. That's not density. You have to start crowding out cars. And then the same thing happens in sprawled out development. You can't have good transit in like a more sprawled out suburban type development. You have to have a car.
But Jason, are we even close to being there yet in terms of the density?
Well, I think that's part of the problem is we keep waiting. Hey, when people are downtown, then we'll start building the density. But it's too late now. You know, we have, you know, hey, a business is here. They're trying to ramp up. And we don't have the density for it. So I'm like, if we wait for metered parking, are we going to wait too late? Like we waited. It sounds like we're starting to wait too long for that dense development that people have been beating the drum for 8-10 years. And then now we're going to start missing out on opportunities. And I just worry that this is like might be a step backward.
Okay, Heidi?
I think the other, we talked a minute ago about the fiscal situation in cities like ours. I think a lot of us feel that, for example, parking garage, what is it? It's actually just stacked parking lots. That's what a parking garage is. Stacked parking lots with some kind of a roadway inside to get you from floor to floor. And so making densifying parking is one answer. But those garages in today's market cost between $27,000 and $30,000 per space. And our city doesn't have the money and is not going to be able to build garages like that. So who is? And, you know, we're in kind of an in-between era when the community is really starting to come back, not only in terms of the urbanization kind of movement, people moving back into cities, that's definitely happening here, but the fact that we have a lot of business sectors that are really starting to grow after decades and decades of loss. And so we're at this interesting inflection point, but financing these things is very complex. So how do you do that? And I agree with you. It's a, you know, you don't want to be behind the eight ball. And at the same time, you can't build on the if come because city council, for example, would never approve that. Not when you've got neighborhoods as poor as we have in this community. So it's a delicate balance of political aspirations and priorities, of good urban planning, of trying to create a place people want to be in, all of those things. And then the financing of things really is where it gets sticky. And I think that's where we're caught right now, is right exactly there.
I want to invite phone calls from our listeners as you think about downtown parking and the city's move to kind of reel back this idea of extending it to 8 p.m. for paid parking meters. They're going to go back to the 6 p.m. plan, raise the cost of parking modestly during the daytime hours. I think what Heidi and Jason are kind of really keying in on is this really interesting hinge point that cities have. When it comes to multimodal transportation, there's really two kind of reasons that, as I see them, and I'm sure the urbanists in the room are about to correct me, but there is a multimodal future, a desire for a multimodal future, because in many ways it's sort of better. You can connect communities better, it's more efficient, it's better for the environment, it's better in a lot of ways, better for equity. And then there's the situation where when density makes it very hard to deal with cars at all, as we've had conversations with Howard Decker when he went to India, there's plenty of places you can't possibly add more lanes and do anything but add more traffic. And so you must go multimodal once you get to a certain point. The question just becomes, when does Rochester get to that point? How can we do that without, as Heidi from Downtown Development has said, is maybe chasing out businesses or tamping down the growth that right now still is saying, okay, but we need parking. It's tough. 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free. 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're calling from Rochester. 263-9994. Let's get our only break of the hour, and we'll get your thoughts on parking next. I'm Evan Dawson. Thursday on The Next Connections. In our first hour, young voters, 18 to 34, aren't really voting. Polls and surveys show that they are energized about issues in this country, and they are often still not planning to vote. What might change that? We explore. And in our Summer of Food second hour, the state of food trucks in Western New York. What's new? What's gone? We'll talk about it. All right, welcome back to Connections. Let's get some of your feedback. Rich in Greece first on the phone. Go ahead, Rich.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I was downtown last week, and it was not a problem. I think there was free parking somewhere because of the festival. But I think what the tripping factor on this that got people to be upset about the price increase is they might have thought it was arbitrary. So when you have your apartment, you know your rent is going to go up. There's a certain basis for that, and you expect it, and everybody rolls with it. But it seemed like it was an arbitrary or capricious thing to generate revenue. And we go, let's let the parking people pay for it. And I know parking is a limited resource, and I think everybody would agree that, you know, you have to control limited resources you charge for them. For example, in Singapore, if you drive into the downtown, you have to put your credit card in a little thing on your dashboard. If you drive between certain hours, you have to pay to be downtown. And that's pretty much done to eliminate congestion. But going back to the parking thing, I don't see why it's an issue if there is a formula or an algorithm for raising the price and it's done regularly, or they just announce, look, for the last 15 years, we didn't raise it. And,
sure.
And you know, so, and that's not a good way to do it either. You should, if you're going to raise prices, It should be based on something that people can understand.
All right, Rich, thanks for the phone call. So, Heidi, did you feel like there was a clear formula and understanding of why the city originally did what they did?
No, I don't think there was. I think the thought was it was growth that could be captured. And I think a lot of the response of many of us involved in this was that the areas that were being impacted are not necessarily growing and are in fact quite fragile. And so that's why we all ended up recommending just boost it 50 cents during the day. It's like people don't even feel it. And that's a much more effective and appropriate way to kind of tax your ability to park on the street.
Okay. Arian?
Yeah, that's what I was hearing too. I heard a lot of people think, you know, because this was rolled out so I saw it on Facebook first kind of appear, and then it was a news story, and it was literally a day before it went into effect. And I think a lot of people that I talked to felt that it was almost deceitful, that it was trying to catch people before kind of purposely not telling people about this and trying to capture them in a ticket situation. And it was that level of kind of I think it was so sudden and so unexpected, and I don't think anyone that I speak to on a regular basis really saw this coming. So I saw a lot of that same thing, is people kind of resented the way it was rolled out. I think if it was addressed, I think if it was approached in a more appropriate manner, certainly I think it would have had a little different response. But I think the anger and resentment that came as a result had to do in part how it was rolled out. Yeah.
Okay.
I wanted to just follow on that quickly. We're talking about many of the reasons why people come downtown and how many people are and how hard many organizations have been working to attract people from the suburbs and the surrounding areas and bring them back downtown and hopefully keep them down here. Well, many of those reasons are small businesses. Their bars, their restaurants, and whether they're fragile, as Heidi said, or they're new, or they've been a long-standing fixture in a neighborhood like Salinger's or the Little Theater or Rocco. These are very small businesses, and I have to say that they should be in this conversation 100% from the beginning. We have to ask them. We can't all be experts on these issues and not ask the business owners and the not-for-profit directors, et cetera, who really have skin in the game. They have their careers on the line. They have their second mortgages on the line, et cetera, et cetera. They really have to be involved with these decisions.
All right. I've got a pile of phone calls now to get to. I told you we'd light people up with a question on parking. Daniel in Rochester next. Please wait if you're on the line. Be patient. We're going to get to all of you. Daniel next. Go ahead.
Hi, my name is Daniel. I have lived in Rochester for the past 3.5 years. Before that, I grew up in New York City, and I lived for 20 years in Boston. We came here specifically for my wife's job, and I'm a bicycle advocate. One of the reasons we deliberately bought a house in the city was to enjoy the multimodal transportation opportunities. I think it's thrilling that Rochester is becoming a world-class city by putting in more bike infrastructure and encouraging individuals to move in to the city. There was a lot of white flight, I know, and that killed the city. I think that I wanted to echo one of the panelists who said that this is a marketing problem. If you actually go and look, I think the Rochester Urban person has some articles at their fingertips that I have seen in the past. There's research that's been done that says that making parking more expensive, bringing parking more to what market rate actually would be and not subsidizing it, does not actually discourage individuals patronizing businesses in the city. It encourages rotation, it encourages turnover, and encourages the city to increase walking infrastructure, biking infrastructure, public transportation infrastructure, and it encourages people to perceive the city as more of a world-class city. I think that when we talk about simply asking businesses, a lot of people will express fears without any grounding in research of what has actually happened in other cities when they have taken steps to discourage parking.
Daniel, thanks for the phone call. Some thoughts, Arian? Go ahead.
Yeah, I think this kind of that's a great, interesting call, because it kind of leads into something that I talk a lot of in my blog. So much of the conversations we're having in our cities today are as much about changing perceptions as they are about practical physical things. And I think, you know, somebody said, how do we kind of address the issue of parking and how do we address the complex issues that they are? We're talking about these very difficult steps of changing people's perceptions about the automobile that have existed for 50, 60 years. Because of subsidies, because the automobile has become so overdominant in our society, there is this feeling that we are entitled to a parking space. We are entitled to free space. It's almost like water. And when it's not free, when you have to pay for it, there's this, people take it very, very personally. And we've seen that in the reaction. The reaction is not just by small businesses locally that feel they're going to be hurt by this, by people that feel that the city's trying to deceive them. It's by people that really feel like this should be a free service. And we've created this in our nation, this kind of auto dependency. And I talk about this all the time, and I know a lot of people roll their eyes at this, but it's true. What we're trying to say is our cities can't exist with that perception. People's perception is, I could talk about this maximum capacity, right? That's how we express ourselves, our wealth, how far we are in the world. We buy the big car, the big house, the big backyard. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's a personal choice. But the fact is, that big, that size, that maximum capacity really can exist in our cities. So the whole reason we talk about multimodal, scalable transportation and things like that are because that's the only way our cities can get back to the way they were. Automobiles, the size of an automobile, unfortunately, has really cut into the life of our cities. And we have to really change the perception slowly. It's going to take a lot of incremental change. And this is just one of those conversations in which that's going to happen. But I think slowly we have to start thinking about our cities differently than our suburbs. We just cannot pretend that one is the other.
Anybody want to disagree?
I would say this, that and as an aspirational goal for the country, it's a very American pattern that we've developed in our regions, our regional growth in this country, which frankly isn't matched in any other continent in the world. And we keep pushing development farther and farther out. In our communities, it's been the wealthier people that live out in the outer rings. When you go to Europe or you go to Asia or, you know, many other parts of the world, it's the wealthy people that live in the core. And if you have less money, you get pushed farther out and you have a longer commute. So we have this unusual, I'd call it weird, but it is what it is, and we're a big country. This is how we've developed. It's the elbow room theory of life. And what that does now in 2018 is it says, if you're New York or Boston or Atlanta or D.C., for example, Chicago, where you have enough density to have a very well-functioning and thoroughly serviced transit system, the ability to make the choice is easier. In our community, we're actually struggling to figure out how to get transit out to outlying towns and communities where a lot of our workers, a lot of people who patronize businesses live. And it isn't just about, you know, are you willing to take an apartment versus a big house? It has to do with schools. It has to do with white flight that happened for years. It's starting to reverse. There are a lot of reasons why Rochester finds itself with the pattern of where we live, the geography of how we live laid out the way it is by 2018.
Can I just make a comment about the transit? Because I'm just going to be the idiot in the room and say that...
You got to stop saying that, but go ahead.
Absolutely.
If there was mass transit, I would not be taking it from my house into the city because there's a bus stop a half a block from my house right now where I live in the suburbs. When I was a kid, I rode the bus downtown at Christmas time. But I'm not going to get on the bus and come downtown because there's a convenience factor. And there are people, I don't have small children, but you don't come down. You have, you know, kids you got to pick up from school. We live in a society where we have to be places. And I'm very sorry, but that means that you have to have a car if you don't live in the city. So the transit thing totally makes sense. But for this small percentage of people like myself, I want to drive downtown. And I will just reiterate again, my friends, you can come downtown. It's very convenient. There's lots of parking. It's really safe. And I don't care how much modern development we have, because we are rooted in amazing history. So come down, park your car, and see the glorious things that your city has right in your backyard.
But transit still wouldn't change your habits.
I don't think transit would change my habits. I will say the bike, though. I have a friend from Scotland that I met here, who everywhere we went, she would ride her bike. And we would leave somewhere at 11 o'clock at night, and she'd be riding her bike. And I'm like, "Are you riding your bike?" And she said she's from Glasgow. No, she rides her bike everywhere. She thinks it's weird that we don't do that. And I was educated in that. And again, it's just an education and an understanding about our options.
Okay. I'm just curious, before I get back to your phone calls, and we're going to have to kind of a lightning round because we've got a ton of them now. But Jason Partika, do you think Joanne would change her mind if a really good transit system existed? Do you think people who think they wouldn't ride it would end up riding it?
I think, again, a transit system can't exist in its own silo. It has to exist with the development around it. So one of the reasons, like you say, oh, I have to be able to have a car because there's all these places I want to go. Well, if all those places were on a straight line that your bus ran down, then you might have a different idea about that. Like, the reason the bus doesn't work is because we make choices in our community to put new development out in Victor, out in East Rochester, out in Webster, out in wherever. Not that those places aren't deserving of development. I don't mean to be that guy, but it is what it is, you know. So it's a function of our design choices, not so much the transit mode.
I got to just make one point. As a mom, if you're downtown at work and your kid is sick and you have to pick your child up from school, I don't care how many buses are running whenever, it's not convenient. And that's just, again, a small thing. Because the bus is so much fun, and it really is amazing, but there are really practicalities that just in everyday life.
I'm just going to add one more thing. Going the other way, 25% of Rochester residents don't have access to a vehicle on a regular basis. So looking at it another way, you know, what if folks in the city want to access resources in outlying areas?
Exactly.
And that's another problem. So many of our jobs have left the city and gone to outlying areas. One reason we promote transit is so that you know, people can have access, whether they have a car or not, or can afford a car or not, to the resources that they need.
That's fair.
And you know what? It's just public transit isn't for everyone. That's really
right.
I'm just
Absolutely.
Not that consumer, and I'm okay saying that.
All right. So a lot of calls. We got to try to move quickly because our callers have the answers and the solutions on parking going forward. Richard in Rochester, next up. Keep it tight. Go ahead, Richard.
Thank you. Applaud all the leaders in the business community that stood up and had their voice heard. This is democracy in action. I just want to highlight some of the unintended consequences of this initiative that occurred in a small corridor of City Hall. I live downtown and witnessed the issuance of parking tickets around the YMCA and booting of vehicles. These are the city people that might actually be concerned about the gentrification who are victims of this, you know, ill-timed move on part of the city that wasn't communicated well. So I want to let people know there are more than the suburbanites who we want to return to the city. There are the residents, and there are the people who might not be in a position to easily afford a $45 ticket at night. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks very much, Richard. I appreciate that phone call. Let's keep it going with our feedback from listeners. And we've got a couple of Kevins. Kevin, number one. Go ahead, Kevin.
I don't know. Is this me?
I think it's you. Are you Kevin?
Okay, good. We got the right one. Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
Anyhow, I'll keep it real quick. One of the things I think is important is to keep it as simple as possible to get people to come downtown. Not that the meters are overly complicated or anything like that, but I, for the life of me, I can't understand. I live downtown now. I don't understand how there isn't an option where I can go online, purchase a city parking pass that's good for anywhere within the city downtown limits or what have you, hang it from my mirror, have be a sticker on the window, let it be weekly, monthly, yearly, something to simplify it and actually generate a little bit more income based on the ease of it and people that might want to go downtown and say, well, I'm going to buy a parking pass just to get ahead of it.
Like an easy park pass.
Right.
And yeah, so
Kevin,
Kevin,
you're describing a 21st century city. And a lot of us want to see technology like that. Apps are used in many big cities. We all travel. We've seen this. The issue that we have here is that you can't have an app that operates properly for payment or to know where there is space without hardware on the ground that we don't have in the city. So you've got to have a way of calculating occupancy, of tracking sensors that track where, for example, along streets there are spaces. And right now we have a city that doesn't have the funds to be able to put those hardware components in place so that we can do exactly what you say. That, frankly, I think would be fantastic to see what you're describing. We're just we're ways yet away from being able to pull that off.
Okay. Kevin, thank you. Interesting idea. We lost the other Kevin, so we're going to go to Keith. Go ahead, Keith.
Evan, interesting show. Just a couple comments. I'm generally speaking, I'd be willing to wager that most of the people that use meters are transient. They come downtown, they have to do something, go to an attorney, run into a business. There's no retail, so nobody's there for long term. If any time I've ever had to run downtown for something, it's a meter. If I'm there for an event, it would be a parking garage. You guys speak constantly of bicycles. I don't think it will ever work. I mean, I spent a couple days in Amsterdam. Well, I think it was a couple days. And the amount of bicycles, the most depressing thing I experienced, because we bicycled around, is I'm struggling to go down the street and I see these little old ladies go whizzing by me. The whole city just uses bicycles. The other thing that I think would be, and I'm stalling because I just forgot what I was going
to
say.
It happens to the best of us, Keith.
Yeah. it was really a brilliant point.
Oh, Keith, it was the best point you've made all month, but you just had just lost it. Call me back. Oh, I know you will, Keith. Thank you. On subjects of culture and what people notice in different places, Joel says, when I was living in Glasgow, Scotland, and Minneapolis, Minnesota, I walked everywhere, including many miles every day throughout those cities. Maybe it's just cultural in some way. I mean, that's what you kind of write a lot about on the Urban Phoenix blog, right, Arian?
It really is. I mean, at some point, this the root of this and a lot of the conversation we're having, and the thing that really nobody wants to say because nobody wants to get into this and I understand it, is there is still this urban versus suburban conversation. And it's unfortunate because we can build a bridge there. We can create, Joanne.
I want to be that bridge.
Absolutely. Let's work together. Let's make it happen. I love it. I love the things you're having to say. And by the way, I don't think your conversation is dumb at all. Or like you said, I think we're here because of you. I think we're having this conversation because we want to find a way to keep our cities. Our cities are beautiful, powerful, productive, machines of art and culture and beauty. And placing a lot of parking, a lot of free parking in those cities, really kind of disrupts that. We've seen that for a long time. At the same time, we understand that it is a part of a suburban culture that has been built around that. And there's nothing wrong with that. The hard part about our cities right now is we're really trying to build for two different people.
I love how you always say there's nothing wrong with that when I think in the back of your mind you really think there is, but you're just being so nice.
I don't at all. I don't at all because I have these conversations all the time with my friends and I understand where they're coming from.
Sure.
Do I believe we need to live in a more dense society? Do I believe that, you know, there's a lot of subsidized sprawl across our country? Absolutely, I do. But at the same time, if we want to change that, we have to find a way to slowly, incrementally welcome people back into our urban centers. And that means accommodating people who may not want to take public transit. And so that's the difficult thing here. We're trying to we're just trying to find a solution that works for the most amount of people.
Well, how about this? Ernie says, our public transit options in Rochester are never promoted as an easy way for folks in the suburbs to come downtown, and that needs to change. In order for it to change, we need, one, park and ride lots on the edge of the city where parking can be free or low cost, and two, frequent service to them 15 minutes or less. This would be a great solution for people who work, especially if employers would subsidize part of their employees' bus passes. That would be an investment in our future. Park and ride lots, more of those? No, yes?
There's one right by my house. I mean, right at Fisher. So I know they're there.
I think what's happening in the bus company now is that we've had the spokes and a wheel kind of pattern to the way our bus system works. In that scenario, you're literally parking like out of St. John Fisher lot, coming into the new transit center, which is gorgeous, by the way, really gorgeous. And then in order to get where you're going, unless you're going downtown, you got to get back on another bus. And so your entire trip one way, by Rochester's standards, we're like a 15-minute drive town. So if it takes you 45 minutes to an hour to get to where you're going, that's a problem. And that's one of the things that's being looked at in this whole new remake of our entire bus system and how it operates. But it's challenging.
Can I tell you what? I'm just going to throw an idea out here. I'm a writer, and I like to do weird stuff. So I would like to take the bus somewhere from my house downtown, and let's write about it, and, like, someone go with me. We'll leave home.
I'll do it.
We'll meet. We'll write about it. We'll Facebook Live it, whatever, and let's, like, do it. Because I really think that every time I think there's an impediment to, like, I'm not going to take mass transit, guess what? Let's take mass transit and see if I really am not going to like it. I mean, and I...
Suburbanite's getting idea. Crazy.
Joanne's
my new friend.
I'll be the suburban outlaw, so you don't have to.
Well, and Kendra on Twitter says, unlike Joanne, if there was a well-established transit system, I would absolutely use it to go downtown. Even now, I use my car to bring my bike downtown to ride around.
Yes.
As a mom, I've done this car and bike with my daughter. She now feels more connected to our city, and it's become a recurring request. If a solid transit system existed in Rochester, I believe it would change the way people choose to move about our city.
Can I just tell you what I discovered? I discovered Zagster, and that has changed the way I move around downtown. I rode a bike for the first time in 30 years, and it was amazing.
That's a thumbs awesome. Up over there. You're happy with what you're
big,
seeing there?
Big thumbs up.
Oh, so much. I bought a bike. I actually bought a bike because of that experience.
I think that's one of the best things to happen to downtown Rochester in a very long time.
And now called Pace. We love those guys.
I want
love those guys.
Your listeners to know that if I can do it, you can do it. Because I am not like an athlete. I am not like a politics person. Yeah, if I can do it, you can do it.
It is clear at the end of this hour that different stakeholders, I think Heidi kind of hit it right here, different points of view, but a lot of the same goals for our city. The question is, what does balance look like in terms of transportation at this moment? And how do you make sure that the moments you want to plan for in the future don't get missed because of sort of an imbalance in infrastructure? And that's what they're all trying for. Well, right now, the city of Rochester has decided they're going to scrap this pay till 8 parking plan, and they're going to go back to 6 p.m., adding 50 cents to the cost of parking during the day, which Heidi says you probably won't even notice during the day. But otherwise, it is a layered and complicated conversation. And our thanks to all of our guests, the great Joanne Brokaw, local writer and improviser.
Thanks, Evan.
Thank you, Joanne. Heidi Zimmermeyer, president of the Rochester Downtown Development Corporation. Nice to see you back here.
Thank you very much.
You will find Arian Horbovitz on the Urban Phoenix blog. Thank you, Arian.
Thanks so much for having us.
Jason Partica with Reconnect Rochester. Easy to find, folks. Thank you, Jason. Oh, and Blue Cease from Roco.
Thanks, Evan.
Bye, Blue. Rob, Megan, Evan, have a great afternoon. Talk to you Thursday.